Welcome, lovely listeners, to the Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales podcast, your one place for creepy, strange, and original stories, just for your lovely ears. Oh, it's a Monday, folks, and I gotta tell ya, what a way to start the week with a jam-packed launch of the finale of Michi's journey. Yep, Act 3 is a mega episode with a new revelation, discovery of unique skills, and so much more. Also, there is extensive author notes this episode, where Carl Brandt has provided an expansive amount of excellent information surrounding Japanese and yokai lore that I know you'll love. Truly, Carl Brandt is the yokai king. So join me today for the finale of Michi's journey to kickstart or end your Monday. Turn the lights off, the sound up, and get ready for something original. As he heard the cries of hundreds of tengu that were touched by the salt carried by the wind, Michi watched as human-like silhouettes with wings start to amass all around the mountain, hundreds if not thousands. His face soured at the sight of this.
"I'm a dead man,"
he muttered before he laughed out of nervousness.
"I wonder how many I can take before I collapse from exhaustion."
It wasn't long before Michi was attacked full force by the Tengu of the mountain. Both Kotengu and Daitengu attacked Michi relentlessly for 2 days and three nights. On the third day, he had slain over 20 Kotengu and 5 Daitengu when he was finally overwhelmed and pinned to the ground. Before they could tear into his soft flesh, he heard a booming voice ring out.
"Bring him to me at the summit."
Michi, exhausted and too tired to open his eyes anymore, the Daitengu and Kotengu argued whether to follow the voice's command or eat him. Michi finally slumped as 2 Daitengu draped his arms over their shoulders and flew him to the summit. He awoke in a small room, resembling the one in a temple. There was a fire built to keep him warm, and a fresh cup of tea sitting next to him. This perplexed Michi.
Where am I?
He asked, sitting up and then calling out.
Hello? Is anyone there?
Only to be greeted by the voice he heard before he passed out.
Oh, good. My guest is awake. I'll be right there, young monk.
The sound of a pair of geta clopping their way from a distant room. The first thing to enter was a large red nose, longer than any other he had ever seen. He estimated it to be about 15 hands in length, followed by a long white beard, and finally a red-faced man with high priest's robes.
"Now, take it easy, child. You've been unconscious for a couple of days now."
The man talked like an eccentric monk.
"You killed a lot of my children."
His smile faded, and his tone less cheerful.
"But you did show me humans have the ability to harm us. I can't control all of my children, so it was a calling."
He stopped abruptly.
"You are not just a normal human."
His nose was only centimeters from Michi's forehead, as he studied the patch of white hair that had taken over Michi's own raven black.
"You are a once-in-a-millennia human."
His voice trailed off as if he was in thought.
"What do you mean?"
Michi asked, confused.
"Your hair, my child, is not just a taint of the other world, but a talent and a gift. If you wish to call it that, and some would call it a curse."
He lifted some of the white hair.
"You are becoming a yokai yourself.
You are a yin and yang recipient."
He clapped gleefully.
"And I'm going to teach you how to harness the yang. You proved you're well adept at using yin with my children."
His eyes now twinkled with excitement.
It's been so long since I've trained a human. But you, you will be a legend.
He clapped his hands and motioned to the tea.
Will you drink while I explain?
Michi took the cup and sipped the tea instantly. He could tell it was brewed with multiple herbs and berries, giving it a complex and slightly sweet taste.
This is delicious,
he said softly, before bidding his host to continue.
As you see, your hair is turning white, and although you don't notice it quite yet, your eyes are turning a light green, and soon you will be able to faintly see the dragon's vein.
He opened a rice paper door to expose Michi to the night sky, which showed hundreds upon millions or even billions of stars, some so closely packed they looked like a dragon across the sky.
You humans can see the reflection of dragon's veins in the sky,
he said, pointing to the dragon-like cluster.
What you see above is as it is down below.
He pointed down towards the ground, but Michi couldn't see anything like what he saw in the sky.
It is where all yokai come from, and where we all return to. Where human spirits return to the earth when their time is up.
He stroked his beard.
In your people's minds, I guess you can say that's where the spirit goes to join its ancestors or to be judged.
His voice was stoic and calm. The man turned to Michi and spoke happily once again.
I would like to train and teach you all that I have to teach, for you have proven you are worthy.
Michi spoke this time, very gratefully.
I would like to learn and possibly follow my own path to enlightenment under your instruction, but I must first introduce myself. I am Michi Taira.
He got on his knees and bowed his head. The old man let out a hearty laugh at the gesture.
I'm the Soul Jobo, Satoru. You may call me Satoru.
He made a respectful gesture with a slight bow.
The first thing you must know about your unique ability is any yokai you fight, you can gain a portion of their unique powers. Can you tell me all the monsters you have fought so far?
With that, Michi focused to recall all his experiences leading to this day. Michi began his list.
I fought a Serugami, Skigumo, Bashonose, Kotengu, and Daitengu.
Satoru stroked his beard as he listened, trying to figure out what power he could have gained from each one.
I'll start with the easiest. I want you to imagine the one power my children, the Daitengu, showed you that was specific to it.
Michi thought about the tornadoes and wind manipulation when a slight breeze fluttered all around him.
Good. Good. Now, imagine the wind, a blade, and strike.
Michi followed the directions and aimed for a leaf floating in the wind outside, when in an instant it was cut in half. The old man clapped with glee.
Now imagine the wings and claws of the Kitengu. Shape them in your mind, and you should be able to call upon a weakened pair of wings and claws. We can spend time training you to become stronger and more adept at these powers. But right now, we want to get your mind working on summoning them.
Michi once again did as he was instructed, and from his back sprouted one white and one black wing. But no matter how hard he flapped them, he could not lift himself. Next, he focused on his hands and feet. A slow blackness crept over them, forming clawed hands and feet resembling the talons of the Kotengu.
You're quite adept for a child,
the old man squealed gleefully. Michi could feel this new power was draining his body more than his regular spells.
Satoru, I don't think I can.
Michi collapsed on the bed again.
Satoru simply just covered the child up again. You held in longer than I anticipated, young one. You are full of promise and potential.
He left Michi for the night and returned to his dwelling. Michi awoke with the break of daylight and was met by Satoru outside.
Good morning, Michi. Your true training begins today.
With that, Satoru began his process each day, consisting of strategy, swordsmanship, mystical arts, spells, meditation, and physical exercise. Michi continued this training for 2 more years, each day growing stronger than the last in mind, body, and spirit. Satoru watched like a proud father. The Daitengu accepted Michi now, and the Kotengu tolerated him. On the 2nd year anniversary, Satoru took Michi's katana and his Kakata's head and disappeared into a building the Tengu used to forge their own tools. Clanking and banging echoed from the structure, and smoke bellowed from the chimney. Satoru emerged in the mid-afternoon carrying what looked like a wrapped Kakata, the prominent jingle that sounded every time Satoru took a step, but when unwrapped, you could see Michi's katana at the very end was affixed to his Kakata head.
This is my gift to you. For completing this training, you have a symbol for your warrior side and your spiritual side. But never forget that you will continue to learn and grow.
Satoru also produced a fresh pair of robes with Michi's family colors and mon on the breast.
These are specially enchanted. They repair themselves as long as a single thread is left. They will recover, and are highly resistant to flame and made from spider silk to make them extra light.
With a large nod, Michi accepted his gifts and showed his gratitude to his master. A crow landed on his shoulder with a note from the temple.
Michi, there is a town going through a drought. We need you. Please, return as fast as possible.
The note was very straight to the point. Satoru patted his young apprentice on the shoulder.
You may return any time you wish. We will always have room for you.
Michi changed into his new clothes and strapped his new katana on his person with a resounding jingle which made him smile.
On to my next adventure,
Michi said as his 2 wings sprouted from his back and he took to the skies flying toward the temple. That night, Satoru walked down the mountain where he saw a young child swinging his sword in solitude. But his form was slightly off.
Hey boy, your form is all wrong,
he said with his boisterous voice. The boy replied, I'm trying to avenge my father's death. His determination and honesty hit Satoru.
Maybe he can be my new apprentice,
he thought before speaking.
If you wish to do that, then tell me your name.
Without missing a beat, the child responded, Ushiwakamaru, never breaking his concentration on his sword swings. Satoru's grin widened.
Then, I shall teach you all that I know, for I am the great Sojobu.
Once again, I was back in my body. I closed the book and looked at the time. It was almost 9. I quickly got dressed and headed to the lobby. I found Jane. She was standing by the door in a mid-thigh-length black dress with a red accented sash tied around her waist, as well as a white midriff long-sleeve jacket and some dress heels that only raised her up 1 inch or 2. She was stunning. And as I approached her, I could smell her perfume, a mixture of bergamot and paradise apple. It gave off the I'm flirty and fun scent. As I approached her, I seemed boring in comparison. I was wearing khaki pants with a navy blue polo shirt underneath, an open-faced light blue button-up shirt, and brown dress shoes. Well, now I feel like I've got to go change, I joked as we made eye contact. She giggled and retorted, I don't think you do. You look dashing. She winked to emphasize the last part, as she came and gave me a hug.
Well, are you ready to go get Din?
Her questioning was so smooth before she stopped and touched my hair.
Are you sure you're okay? You have gotten much whiter since this afternoon.
Her face showed genuine concern for my health.
I'm okay. It must be a genetic thing. I tried to play it off, knowing what was really happening to me.
Okay, well, let's get to dinner anyway. There is this place that the locals keep talking about, and I can't wait to try it.
She was more and more excited as she talked, so I escorted her out and walked street side like a gentleman should. We ate dinner, talked about our families back home. Before we knew it, I asked her back to my room for some sake that I got earlier. She playfully accused me of trying to get her drunk again. I reassured her it wasn't more than 4 cups worth in the bottle. She reluctantly agreed to 2 drinks. Then she was going back to her room. Upon entering my room, we saw the weird bottle, mouth and eye both open, and she started laughing, looking at it.
Is this a joke? You trying to make your bottle look like a monster?
She asked through her giggles as she inspected the bottle.
I simply rubbed the back of my neck and went with it.
Yeah, figured it would get a chuckle out of you. I laughed a little nervously, but approached the bottle, uncorking it. The alcoholic smell filled the room. I grabbed 2 glasses and began pouring, but something was odd. The bottle never seemed to get lighter.
Let's toast,
she said, smiling as I handed her the glass. Okay, what shall we toast to? I said, fishing for the answer as I held my glass up.
2 new friends and foreign places that are dusty and make us rusty,
she said as she clinked her glass against mine and sucked down the nectar inside. I followed suit and downed my drink. It was extremely good sake. She handed me her empty glass.
Fill it on up, bartender,
she said, doing her best impression of a country accent. I poured another glass for each of us. Once again, the bottle never seemed to lighten.
Here you are, madam, the finest sake in the region,
aged for hundreds of years,
I said, putting on my best French butler accent that I could, which erected quite the giggle fest from her. Before we down this one, I guess our night has come to its end. Can I interest you in another night out to dinner sometime? I asked, hopefully.
Her grin spread. Definitely. But would you be a gentleman and walk me to my room?
Her eyes told me she really wanted that, so I had to. As we walked the 3 door lengths, we held hands and smiled. Well, miss, I'm glad to be of good company. But I do believe this is where we must part ways, I said, almost disheartening, before she leaned in and kissed me softly.
Mwah. Thank you for the wonderful time. And I hope you have more of that sake next time we do this,
she jested between the 2 of us.
But for now, good night,
she said as she retreated to her room. Upon returning to my room, the bottle still weighed the same. So I decided to test it and grab a large cup, more than what should physically be able to be held in that bottle, and I began pouring till the glass was filled to the top with the same sake.
What the hell? How is this possible?
Well, you cleaned me up and took care of me, so I'll make sure your cup will never be empty.
A deep voice came from the bottle, and the mouth moved and the eye blinked.
I'm a special kind of yokai, a kame-osa.
The bottle sprouted hairy arms and legs and stood by itself.
Do not fear me. As my new owner, any liquid you give me, I will hold on to and never run out. Just continue to take care of me.
I held out a finger for the little monster to shake, and he did. You just made my drinking nights a hell of a lot cheaper, I jokingly said as I studied the ugly little creature. But I need to go to sleep for the night. So if you could also.
No problem, boss.
The arms and legs retreated and the eye closed. I was still wary about having something so unknown, but I decided to give it a trial shot and laid my head down and drifted to sleep. This concludes the final act of Michi's Journey Part 5, and I hope you all loved it, and a special thank you to Kyle Brandt, the author of Michi's Journey. And before we finish this, we have some author notes, my favorite, from Kyle Brandt. author's notes. First off, I would like to thank everyone for the kind words over the months. As I developed this from an idea to a story, I've thrown in some fun little things for those fluent with mythology or Japanese history. But when I'll get to the explanation for those who are not, in a section I'll name Easter eggs. And secondly, to thank SFGT, oh you're welcome buddy, for narrating these. I know the author notes are some of his favourite things to get from me, that's true. And this one is going to be note extensive. Brilliant. Thanks, Carl. Terms. Obi, a sash for traditional Japanese dress. Geta are a form of traditional Japanese footwear that resemble both clogs and flip-flops. They are a kind of sandal with an elevated wooden base held onto the foot with a fabric thong to keep the foot well above the ground. Kakara is a Buddhist ring staff used primarily in prayer or as a weapon that originates from India. The jingling of the staff's rings is used to warn small sentient beings, i.e. insects, to move from the carrier's path and avoid being accidentally trodden on. In ancient times, it was used also to scare away dangerous animals. Ringing also is used to alert the faithful that there is a monk within earshot, in need of alms. In the Sarvastivada Vinaya, the kakara is called the sounding staff, because of the tinkling sounds the rings make. A kakara may have either four rings, representing the four noble truths, six rings, representing the six perfections, or 12 rings, representing the 12-fold chain of cause and effect. A four-ring kakara is carried by novice monks, a six-ring kakara is carried by a bodhisattva, and the 12-ring kakara is carried by the Buddha. Most commonly seen are those with six rings, which have also been claimed to represent the six states of existence: humans, animals, hell, hungry ghosts, gods, and asuras. Aiori is a traditional Japanese sunken hearth, used for heating the home and for cooking food. It is essentially a square, stone-lined pit in the floor, equipped with an adjustable pot hook. Monster notes. Kotengu resemble large birds of prey with minor human-like characteristics. Often, they wear the robes of a yambushi, an ascetic and mystical hermit. They sometimes carry fine weapons or other items, usually stolen from human homes or temples. Kotengu behave more like wild birds than like people. They usually live solitary lives, but occasionally work together or with other yokai to accomplish their goals. They are hoarders, and like to collect trinkets and valuable magical items, which they sometimes trade. When angered, they throw tantrums and go on destructive rampages, taking out their anger on anything near them. Kotengu have very little respect for humans. They feast on human flesh, and commit rape, torture, and murder just for fun. They abduct people and drop them from great heights, deep into the woods, or tie children to the top of trees so all can hear their screams, but none can reach them to help. They kidnap people and force them to eat feces until they go mad. They especially revel in tormenting monks and nuns, robbing temples, and trying to seduce clergy. During the Edo period, most Tengu lore was gradually superseded by amusing folk tales, dampening the vicious image portrayed in earlier stories. Daitengu. Daitengu are much larger and imposing than Kotengu. They usually appear in a more human-like form, usually that of a man dressed in the robes of an ascetic monk, with a red face and incredibly long and phallic nose. The longer the nose, the more powerful the Tengu, and large feathered wings sprouting from their backs. Only rarely do they appear in the more primitive avian form of the lesser Tengu. Daitengu live solitary lives on remote mountaintops, far removed from humanity. Their time is spent in thought, meditation, and perfecting themselves. They possess greater pride, wisdom, and power than their lesser Tengu cousins. They can also be just as savage and unpredictable, making them potentially much more dangerous. In fact, natural disasters and other great catastrophes are often attributed to the wrath of a powerful Daitengu. However, they also possess more self-restraint, and some of them are occasionally willing to give aid to worthy humans. Over the centuries, While Kotengu continued to terrorize people whenever they could, Daitengu came to be viewed less as the enemy of mankind and more as a race of godlike sages living deep in the mountains. They became closely connected with the ascetic mountain religion of Shakendo. The mountain mystics grew close to the Tengu, seeking their wisdom and worshipping them as divine beings. It is perhaps this mystic religion that humankind was eventually able to earn the respect of the Tengu. Many brave men have ventured into the unknown wilds in hopes of gaining some of the Tengu's wisdom, and occasionally, the Tengu would teach secrets and impart their magical knowledge to the worthiest of them. By the 19th century, the warlike nature and vicious demeanor of the Tengu came to be seen as honorable traits unique to these powerful bird-like spirits, and their knowledge and skills were popularized in the arts. Through ukiyo-e prints and no and kabuki theater. From then on, the Tengu have remained one of the most well-known and loved subjects of Japanese folklore. According to the Buddhist law, Tengu are born when a person dies who is not wicked enough to go to hell, but is too angry, vain, proud, or heretical to go to heaven. The Tengu is a personification of those excessive vices magnified and empowered in a new demonic form. So Jobo. Now with this one, I took a more liberal approach to him, due to the mystic hermit on the mountain as an overplayed trope that kind of gets old. So I changed him to be more like a crazy wise mountain man instead, kind of a way to interject a little humor into the story. So Jobo is a name given to the Daitengu who lives on Mount Kuruma, in the northern part of Kyoto. His home is in Sojogatani, the Valley of the High Priest. Located deep within the interior of the mountain, he has long, white hair, an incredibly long nose, and possesses the strength of 1,000 Tengu. So Jobu is first in rank among the Tengu, and is often referred to as their king. He is known through his connection to Kuruma Temple, an isolated temple which practices a unique branch of esoteric Buddhism. Kuruma Temple has long had a connection with Yamabushi and ascetic mountain religions, and the Tengu, which these religions worship. Because So Jobu resides there, Mount Kurama is also considered to be the most important mountain to Tengu. According to Kurama Temple, So Jobu is either one rank below Maosan, one third of the Holy Trinity, which is essential to the Kurama faith, or is in fact another form of Maosan. Kameosa is a possessed old jar usually containing sake, or water, that sometimes can take up humanoid features. Though it may seem frightening because of its appearance, hairy limbs, face full of cracks, this tsukumogami must have been treated well by its owner, for it is one of the few bakemono that is outright benign towards humans. This old sake jar is fairly frightening to look upon, with its hairy goblin limbs and a face made of cracks. But when it has been left unused for many years, soaking up magic from heaven and earth, it spontaneously begins to produce an inexhaustible supply of rice wine, water, or possibly any fluid one might put into it. Spells. Nine cuts mudra, hand sign, and mantra, spoken phrase. These are the same as the traditional nine cuts, but a much stronger form. They have a mudra and mantra to go with each syllable. Rin mudra, Seal of the Thunderbolt Mantra, on Baishi Ramanantaya, Sawaka, All Hail the Glory of Vaisavana. Pyo Mudra, Seal of the Great Thunderbolt Mantra, on Ishanaya Intarya Sawaka, All Hail the Instrument of Divine Righteousness. To Mudra, Seal of the Outer Lion, the Mantra, on Jitarashi Itara Jibantono Sawaka, All Hail the Excellent and Glorious Celestial Jewel. Sha Mudra, the Seal of the Inner Lion, the mantra is, on Hayabishamatra Sawaka, All Hail the Swift Thunderbolt of Exalted Strength, Virtue and Glory. Kai Mudra, Seal of the Outer Bonds, the mantra is, on Nomaku Samara Basarandan Kan, homage to all pervading diamond thunderbolts, utterly crush and devour. Jin Mudra, Seals of the Inner Bonds, the mantra is, on Aganaya in Maya Sawaka, All Hail the Glory of Agni. Retsu Mudra, Seal of the Wisdom Fist, the mantra is, on Irotahi Chanoga Jibatai Sawaka, all hail the radiant divine, all illuminating light, bursting and streaming forth in all directions. Zai Mudra, seal of the ring of the sun. The mantra is On Chirichi Iba Rataya Sawaka. Glory to divine perfection. And lastly, the last mudra and mantra, cause you got my tongue in knots, Kyle. Zen Mudra, seal of the hidden form. Mantra, On Araba Sha No Sawaka. All hail. This is literally all that made sense in this mantra without adding in just letters. Daitengu fight, Kekai. So during the Daitengu fight, I don't know if I portrayed this justly, so I'll explain what he did. Michi made possibly the first ever potato gun by using the tornado's high-pressured winds trapped inside an open-faced box and then releasing the built-up air pressure, which expelled him like a potato gun at the Daitengu. Joku Suru. To purify, or I purify this, is just a short incantation to basically bless the sword. Physical 9 cut spell. As seen with the second fight with the Kotengu, if the 9 cuts are physically etched onto a surface and the incantation spoken, it increases the power of the spell. 9 cut spell. You have the 9 cuts. Using paper or air is the lowest, weakest form of the spell. Works on wiki yokai and spirits that have not possessed a person. Physical cuts on the objects or demons while reciting the incantation is a mid-strength. Works on most physical yokai. Mudra and mantra is the strongest form of this spell, able to work on anything, demigod or lower, with its only downfall being the amount of time it takes to perform. And to sign us out is Carl Brandt's Easter eggs, Ushiwakamaru. This is an Easter egg to those who really know your Japanese history, as this is the childhood name of Minamoto Yoshitsune, one of the most well-known and highly decorated warriors in their history. And the fact that we see the beginning of the story that makes the Sojobu famous. Legend has it that the Taira clan killed Ushiwakamaru's father before he was one. He was then taken to be raised by monks in a temple near Mount Kurama. He would then travel deep into the woods and practice his sword strikes in hopes of becoming strong enough to avenge his father. This was a very dangerous quest, as Tengu are fierce and unpredictable. And Sojobu was rumored to eat children who wandered too deep into the forest. However, Sojobu was impressed with the young boy's bravery and agreed to train him. The child later was known as Minamoto Yoshitsune, who lived 1159 to 1189 CE. Yoshitsune remains one of Japan's most celebrated warriors and is one of the main heroes in the tale of the Heike. His unmatched swordsmanship is credited to the training he received from the Tengu of Mount Kurama. And lastly, Michi's whiting hair, green eyes, and dragon vein. I am a huge fan of anime, and one of my favorites is Mushishi. My story is heavily influenced by this anime's framework, in that the anime's main character studies Mushi, yokai. But he's only able to see them due to a run-in with a mushi at an early age, and the one he runs into takes his right eye's sight, but changes his hair white, and his other eye an earthly green. This lets him see into the ethereal plane. He later encounters a boy who can see what the English dub deemed the dragon's vein, similar to ley lines, but you can't look into it, as it will call the attention of the mushi, and one can curse you like it did to him. But you can always see its reflection in the sky. I love the concept and decided to adopt it for this story. A little fact for you, Kyle. I have seen Mushishi, and it was one of my favorite animes. I couldn't put my finger on it, but something about Michi really resonated with me. It's why I loved reading it so much. And when you mentioned this anime, a lot of old memories came flooding back. If anyone hasn't seen that anime, I highly recommend it. It's pretty old now. I remember seeing it possibly 7 years ago or more. It's pretty old. But it's great. Very well written, brilliant acting, and some amazing fight scenes. So be sure to check that out. And folks, this ends Michi's Journey Part 5. A huge thank you to Kyle Brandt, and I'll keep you all posted when Kyle sends in some more Michi's Journey stories. Or any other stories he might have up his sleeve. and stay tuned for tomorrow and this week, because I have a bunch of new no sleeps, creepy pasta stories, and even, if I can squeeze them in, some brilliant fan stories just for your lovely ears. And if you have any time to spare and want to help this channel grow, the best way to do this is to hop onto iTunes, click on my profile, so the podcast logo or icon, and give the podcast a review. Every single rating helps immensely and generates more awareness for the podcast, of course, but more importantly, the authors that are on this podcast. Every single review counts, and it's you lovely people that make it happen. So thank you so much, and I appreciate any reviews that come my way. And on that note, it is that time. This is the place where stories live, and you telltellers come to listen. Enjoy your day or night, and join me every weekday for our creepy tradition. And as always, till next time.